Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have another story on Route 66. Ashley Thompson and Katie Weaver report on how the popular American roadway attracts visitors from around the world.
There's a yellow rose in Texas I'm going there to see. No other fella knows her, nobody, only me. She
cried so Shamrock, Texas is a small town 30 kilometers from the Oklahoma-Texas border. The nearest major international airport is some 140 kilometers away. Some might say it is in the middle of nowhere. And yet, every year, Shamrock welcomes nearly 15,000 international visitors. What draws so many to this Texas town of 2,000 people? Route 66, the Main Street of America. Most roads are used to get from point A to point B, but Route 66 is different. Many decades ago, Route 66 travelers who passed through Shamrock were on their way west, seeking more opportunity and a better life. For today's travelers who make the long drive from Chicago to Los Angeles, the road itself is the attraction. Route 66, often called the Mother Road, is known worldwide, and every year, thousands of international visitors come to see what makes it so special. You see them traveling in large groups on motorcycles or buses. You see them traveling in small groups, at a slower pace, in a car or recreational vehicle.
Diane Klontz works at the U Drop Inn in Shamrock. The Art Deco-style inn began hosting travelers in the 1930s. Today, it is a friendly visitor's center and a place for travelers to talk and enjoy some coffee before hitting the road again. The center displays photographs from Route 66's early period and vintage clothing for visitors to try on. On its wall hangs a world map with hundreds of pushpins. Each one represents an overseas visitor.
They're from all over. We have many Europeans. We have people from Russia. We have a lot of Australians. The appeal for many, they tell me, is that when you've lived in a country where there are borders and you cannot freely go from state to state, country to country like we can, the appeal is the amazing openness of getting on Route 66 and going from Chicago to Santa Monica, California. They love the beauty as well as the freedom.
The freedom of the open road is what draws the large motorcycle groups from countries as far as Switzerland, Germany, and Brazil. Certainly, they could go faster on the newer interstate highways. But this journey is not about speed. From Illinois to Texas to California, and all of the places in between, international visitors who travel the Mother Road get a taste of small-town America. They experience a way of life far removed from the bright lights of New York and Miami, the two most popular destinations for foreign visitors to the U.S.
In Joliet, Illinois, about an hour outside of Chicago, a Swiss motorcycle group was at the very beginning of its Route 66 adventure. The bikers stopped to enjoy an ice cream cone at Rich and Creamy. It is a kitschy roadside sweet shop with a large green and pink sign that reads, "Joliet, Kicks on 66." The 30 bikers in the motorcycle tour group had flown to Chicago from Europe. They rented Harley-Davidson motorcycles in Chicago and plan to take 3 weeks to travel to L.A., the end of Route 66. One of the bikers said that, for them, taking a motorcycle along Route 66 is just something you hear about and want to do. After some ice cream and a few stops at other roadside attractions, the group fueled up at Nellie's Diner in nearby Wilmington. In recent years, the diner has become a favorite lunch place for international visitors.
Flags from around the world hang in the cozy restaurant, which mostly offers hamburgers and other sandwiches. People from all over have written their names and messages in dozens of languages on Nellie's walls. Though it is a little stressful, the cooks and servers have become experts at quickly feeding big groups of hungry bikers all at once. These days, foreign tourists far outnumber American tourists along Route 66. Melba Rigg sees that every year at her souvenir shop in Galena, Kansas. For the 6 months of the year that Cars on the Route is open, Melba meets and greets some 5,000 overseas visitors. In that same period, about 1,000 U.S. visitors stop at the store. Melba and others along Route 66 say the appeal of the road is only growing. Fran Hauser runs a business at the geographical midpoint of the Mother Road in Adrian, Texas. While most of her visitors are from Europe, she says more tourists from Asia, Australia, and South America are coming each year.
We are seeing this year tons of people from China, which we had not seen a few years ago. We see them from Japan, New Zealand. It's all over the world, and it is wonderfully gratifying.
International visitors along Route 66 leave their mark, literally. Not far from the road's midpoint in Texas is Cadillac Ranch. It is one of the most famous and visible roadside attractions of them all. 10 old Cadillac cars rise half-buried from the ground. Their classic tail fins point to the wide Texas sky. The art installation is meant to represent the golden age of cars, a period of history when Route 66 thrived. The site attracts plenty of tourists, many of whom come with a can of spray paint. Visitors are permitted to paint the cars. Susanna was visiting Cadillac Ranch from Spain. She rented a car in Los Angeles and was on her way to Chicago via Route 66. At Cadillac Ranch, she wrote her name on one of the old cars before continuing her travels.
Well, we actually love it. We saw it on pictures on the internet before, so we said, like, we have to stop here. It's really nice.
The Route 66 journey is one that many people around the world have long dreamed of. Ednilson Gablaki was at the end of that journey. He and 15 other bikers from Brazil enjoyed the final moments of their Route 66 experience at the Santa Monica Pier, where the Mother Road meets the Pacific Ocean. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. Tune in again next week for our report on America's westward expansion and the role Route 66 played.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From from VOA Learning English. This is In the News. The National Medical Council in Cameroon is calling on government officials to close 1,000 hospitals it says are operating illegally. The council says the hospitals do not have enough trained medical workers and equipment. It says the medical centers are endangering the lives of millions of people. But some of the centers have trained, part-time medical workers. These doctors and nurses work in more than one clinic as a way to increase their earnings. And some doctors have left their jobs at government-operated hospitals and opened clinics so they can earn more money. This is not a new problem for Cameroon, and it seems to be growing. Early last year, VOA reported that the Ministry of Health had identified 600 illegal hospitals and clinics. Then, like today, it said they were responsible for causing deaths. More than a year and a half ago, the health minister said the government would target illegal clinics and close them if they did not have permission to operate. Cameroon's medical council now says 200 medical centers are operating illegally in the capital, Yaoundé. Reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeka visited one such clinic recently. He spoke with Yannick Ahanda, one of 20 people waiting for medical care.
Je préfère les cliniques parce que les rendez-vous sont respectés, on ne s'aligne pas.
He says he likes to go to private clinics because patients do not need to wait a long time to see a doctor or nurse. He adds that at government hospitals, patients are sometimes told after a long wait to return later because the doctor is not there or at a conference. He also says health care is better at private hospitals and clinics. An ambulance has brought a 66-year-old woman to the Yaoundé Central Hospital. Sylvie Manga is her daughter. She says her family turned to the hospital for specialized care after several failed attempts to treat her mother at a private clinic.
You will not imagine that they operate and they forget pieces of clots, they forget it in the stomach. We carried the patient back home. After some time, we discovered that the wound is not getting healed. When we take her back to the hospital, she's operated again and the pieces is removed.
Titania Ekoe is vice president of the medical council. He says the group cannot stay silent while people suffer because of poor care from untrained workers.
Il existe 1,000 structures sanitaires clandestines.
Professor Ekoe says there are more than 1,000 illegal and secret hospitals and medical schools throughout the country. He says many use unqualified doctors, laboratory technicians, and others to treat patients. More than 500 medical doctors and 5,000 nurses are trained in Cameroon every year. But in 1996, when the economy worsened, the pay of doctors was reduced by 60% to about $300 per month. Dr. Viban Eugene owns a private medical facility. He says some doctors open clinics so they can earn more money. He says patients get better care at clinics than at government hospitals.
There he's going to take more care, there he's going to take more time to give you adequate care, but in the hospital there are so many people, so many patients, he's not going to get more time.
And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Now, the special English program, American Stories.
Today, we begin a new series from a book by American writer Edgar Rice Burroughs. The book is called A Princess of Mars. It is the first book in a series that Mr. Burroughs wrote about a man who travels to Mars during the last years of the 1800s. There, the man meets strange beings and sees strange sights. At first, he is a captive, then a warrior, and after many battles, a prince of a royal family. Shep O'Neill begins the story of A Princess of Mars.
I am a very old man. How old, I do not know. It is possible I am 100, maybe more. I cannot tell, because I have never aged as other men do. So far as I can remember, I have always been a man of about 30. I appear today as I did 40 years ago. Yet, I feel that I cannot go on living forever. Someday, I will die the real death from which there is no escape. I do not know why I should fear death, I, who have died 2 times, and am still alive. I have never told this story. I know the human mind will not believe what it cannot understand. I cannot explain what happened to me. I can only tell of the 10 years my dead body lay undiscovered in an Arizona cave. My name is John Carter. I am from the state of Virginia. At the close of the Civil War, I found myself without a home, without money, and without work. I decided the best plan was to search for gold in the great deserts of the American Southwest. I spent almost a year searching for gold with another former soldier, Captain James Powell, also of Virginia. We were extremely lucky. In the winter of 1865, we found rocks that held gold. Powell was trained as a mining engineer. He said we had uncovered over $1 million worth of gold in only 3 months. But the work was slow, with only 2 men and not much equipment. So we decided Powell should go to the nearest settlement to seek equipment and men to help us with the work. On March 3rd, 1866, Powell said goodbye. He rode his horse down the mountain toward the valley. I followed his progress for several hours. The morning Powell left was like all mornings in the deserts of the great Southwest, clear and beautiful. Not much later, I looked across the valley. I was surprised to see 3 riders in the same place where I had last seen my friend. After watching for some time, I decided the 3 riders must be hostile Indians. Powell, I knew, was well armed and an experienced soldier, but I knew he would need my aid. I found my weapons, placed a saddle on my horse, and started as fast as possible down the trail taken by Powell. I followed as quickly as I could until dark. About 9 o'clock, the moon became very bright. I had no difficulty following Powell's trail. I soon found the trail left by the three riders following Powell. I knew they were Indians. I was sure they wanted to capture Powell. Suddenly I heard shots far ahead of me. I hurried ahead as fast as I could. Soon I came to a small camp. Several hundred Apache Indians were in the center of the camp. I could see Powell on the ground. I did not even think about what to do. I just acted. I pulled out my guns and began shooting. The Apaches were surprised and fled. I forced my horse into the camp and toward Powell. I reached down and pulled him up on the horse by his belt. I urged the horse to greater speed. The Apaches, by now, realized that I was alone and quickly began to follow. We were soon in very rough country. The trail I chose began to rise sharply. It went up and up. I followed the trail for several hundred meters more until I came to the mouth of a large cave. It was almost morning now. I got off my horse and laid Powell on the ground. I tried to give him water, but it was no use. Powell was dead. I laid his body down and continued to the cave. I began to explore the cave. I was looking for a safe place to defend myself, or perhaps for a way out, but I became very sleepy. It was a pleasant feeling. My body became extremely heavy. I had trouble moving. Soon, I had to lay down against the side of the cave. For some reason, I could not move my arms or legs. I lay facing the opening of the cave. I could see part of the trail that had led me here. And now, I could see the Apaches. They had found me, but I could do nothing. Within a minute, one of them came into the cave. He looked at me, but he came no closer. His eyes grew wide. His mouth opened. He had a look of terror on his face. He looked behind me for a moment and then fled. Suddenly, I heard a low noise behind me. So could the rest of the Apaches. They all turned and fled. The sound became louder, but still I could not move. I could not turn my head to see what was behind me. All day I lay like this. I tried again to rise and again, but I still could not move. Then I heard a sharp sound. It was like a steel wire breaking. I quickly stood up. My back was against the cave wall. I looked down. There before me lay my body. For a few moments, I stood looking at my body. I could not bring myself to touch it. I was very frightened. The sounds of the cave and the sight of my body forced me away. I slowly backed to the opening of the cave. I turned to look at the Arizona night. I could see 1,000 stars. As I stood there, I turned my eyes to a large red star. I could not stop looking at it. It was Mars, the red planet, the red god of war. It seemed to pull me near. Then For a moment, I closed my eyes. There was an instant of extreme cold and total darkness. Suddenly, I was in deep, dreamless, peaceful sleep. I opened my eyes upon a very strange land. I immediately knew then I was on Mars. Not once did I question this fact. My mind told me I was on Mars, as your mind tells you that you are upon Earth. You do not question the fact. Nor did I. I found myself lying on a bed of yellow-colored grass that covered the land for kilometers. The time was near the middle of the day, and the sun was shining full upon me. It was warm. I decided to do a little exploring. Springing to my feet, I received my first Martian surprise. The effort to stand carried me into the Martian air to the height of about 1 meter. I landed softly upon the ground, however, without incident. I found that I must learn to walk all over again. My muscles were used to the gravity of Earth. Mars has less gravity. My attempts to walk resulted in jumps and hops, which took me into the air. I once landed on my face. I soon learned that it took much less effort for me to move on Mars than it did on Earth. Near me was a small, low wall. Carefully, I made my way to the wall and looked over. It was filled with eggs, some already broken open. Small, green creatures were in them. They looked at me with huge red eyes. As I watched the fierce-looking creatures, I failed to hear 20 full-grown Martians coming from behind me. They had come without warning. As I turned, I saw them. One was coming at me with a huge spear, with its sharp tip pointed at my heart.
This is Bob Doty. You have been listening to American Stories and our version of A Princess of Mars. The voice of John Carter was Shep O'Neill. Our program was written for radio, produced and directed by Paul Thompson. Join us again next week for the next part of the Edgar Rice Burroughs story, A Princess of Mars, on the special English program, American Stories, on the Voice of America.